Friday, 5 p.m. The Triple Happy Hour, time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. I'm Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well as always on Friday, ready to give you another series of our, another show of our series, How Music Changed. We've been doing this now for over 20 years. There are so many shows that we've done, and we've still got a good 20 more years to go to finish.
A long way to go.
Yep, we do. Definitely a long way to go. We're on a series right now that is very, very close to my heart. Very, I think it's one of the most important series that I could possibly do, going all the way back to when we did a series on things like The Birth of the Blues and stuff like that, which I took a lot of pride in. That was a lot of work when we did that. All those old shows, by the way, are available on our website if you go to AmericanHitNetwork.com. And when I say available, I mean you can just go and take a look and go to the How Music Changed section, which is right on the front page, and look at all the different topics that we've covered and find the ones that you find to be the most attractive or that you think might be the most interesting. They're there for free. You can play any one of them in any order, any way you want. It's very easy. So I highly recommend it because it's, you know, it's a lot of work that we put into it. The series that we're on now, though, is on the American Anthology of Folk Music, or the Anthology of American Folk Music, depending on how you say it. It's a pretty remarkable piece of work that was put together by a guy named Harry Smith. He didn't record any of the songs himself. He just collected the records.
And he lived right here in New York City at the Chelsea Hotel.
That's right. I think he was, you found that, you stumbled upon that, Heidi, how? That was interesting.
Just Kids by Patti Smith.
Oh, yeah, she got to know him because she was trying to get a place to live. And he was the guy that was actually running, like, acting like, he worked there, I guess is what I'd say, on some level. That's probably how he paid for his own room, by doing some work when he was there. But anyway, Harry Smith was a big record collector, a bit of an unusual guy. And he was gathering as much information about these old songs that were being forgotten. Nobody was interested. In 1950, nobody was interested in what happened in 1920 or 1930. It just was gone, forgotten, especially if we're talking about music that came from deep in the country part of America, where the songs were barely being heard by anybody except for the local audience. So he noticed or realized the value of all of this and decided that he would make a compendium of them, organizing them and putting as much information as he could into the records and putting it for sale. And he did this in 1952. And it sold like peanuts. It didn't really sell at all. And it seemed as though the whole thing was a bit of a bust until the folk movement came along in the latter part of the 50s. And all of a sudden, people were scrambling to get a copy of this because they were using it for source material. And it became very quickly one of the most important albums of American folk music that was ever recorded or put together. So that's the story of how it all came about. And there were three editions that were put out in his lifetime. There was a fourth edition that came out after he passed, but very much in the same type sort of framework that he did with his three. So I'm going to include the fourth in as we cover it. We finished part one with the first three shows in our series. And so now that we've completed the volume one series, which was dedicated to ballads, we now move on to volume two, which is dedicated to what Harry Smith called social music. In this case, though, the term social music covers a great span of musical styles and also the social, quote unquote, intent of the songs themselves. Like, for instance, social music applies to songs that were primarily suited for dance and social gatherings, but it also applies to ethnic and religious songs, as they were also utilized for social gatherings, albeit with an entirely different purpose than straightforward entertainment. So much, but certainly not all, of the dance music in part two of his series is instrumental. while the religious songs, by definition, require lyrics to make their point. So this episode today focuses mainly on instrumental recordings. And the first one up is a song called Sail Away Lady by Uncle Bunt Stevens. Now, John L. Stevens was born in Bedford, Tennessee, orphaned at an early age, and raised in the town of Flat Creek. But while working on a construction site in 1926, he decided to enter a fiddle contest that was sponsored by the automaker Henry Ford, who was a fan of old-time string band music and wanted to promote its popularity. Stevens, in his competition, won at every level, reaching the finals in Detroit as the South's representative. He most impressed the judges with the song Cackle in Hand and the song we're about to play, Sail Away Lady. He won first prize and was awarded $1,000 from Henry Ford. That's a lot of money. 1926. That's when this song, by the way, this is one of the oldest songs in the collection. 1926, making it exactly 100 years old. That's right as of now. That's incredible. He also won a new Lincoln automobile and a set of new clothes. He requested cash instead of the Lincoln. 5 feet tall, less than 120 pounds. Uncle Bunt Stevens appeared as a guest at the Grand Ole Opry, billed as the world champion fiddler. So, Harry Smith's notes state thus: this performance is probably similar to much American dance music in the period between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. Although by the 17th century, the banjo had been introduced to this continent from West Africa, the European settlers generally used the violin unaccompanied for dancing and sang unaccompanied or with a violin only. Increased social contacts of various kinds during the middle 19th century popularized the violin-banjo combination. So there you have it. Here, though, this is an unaccompanied violin solo. And as I said, it's called Sail Away Lady, and the artist is Uncle Bunt Stevens. Thank you. Uncle Bunt Stevens, Sail Away Lady. And as I speak these words, that song, in 1 month's time, will be 100 years old. They have the exact date. It was recorded in New York on March 29th, 1926. I think that's amazing. I think what Harry Smith is trying to do here with the second part is give us sort of a chronological play of how the music developed from very old style solo fiddle to eventually having fiddle with mixed with other instruments, as this next track, well, with a guitar anyway. This is a fiddle and a guitar player. It's credited to Jelson Setters. He's the fiddle player, and also he sings. We have no idea who the guitar player is. It's Jelson Setters. The song is called The Wild Wagoner, and it's an interesting story in his life that comes with the booklet of the anthology Folk Music. The story of Jelson Setters of Lost Hope Hollow, Kentucky, is an intriguing one. Folk festival organizer and entrepreneur Gene the Traipsin' Woman Thomas, who ran the American Folk Song Festival near Ashland, Kentucky, from 1931 into the 60s, presented Jelson Setters to the public as an old fiddler who had lived in isolation in the mountains for many years, still possessing archaic traits of his English heritage and a repertoire of ancient British ballads. That's exactly why Harry Smith loves this stuff. It was also said that through a medical operation, Setters had recently regained his eyesight and was experiencing a great shock at discovering the urban world. He was taken to New York to be presented at society functions and to England to be presented to the King and the Queen. This is rather true. He played for Charles, I believe. I'm trying to see if they give me the name of the king. Oh, George. He played for George V. There we go. Books were written about him, and his authenticity was attested to by a number of folklore scholars. Thing is, his real name, though, was James William Day, and he was from Cattlesburg, Kentucky, across from the Big Sandy River in West Virginia. His eye surgery had actually occurred over 20 years earlier. But during the 1930s and the 1940s, he performed at folk festivals as Jelson Setters, which was a name that he created by combining the names of his father and his mother. And he also recorded for the Library of Congress. So, Harry Smith's words on The Wild Wagoner, a little bit different, because he's very obsessed with how the instruments came into play. And he goes, the use of the guitar became widespread in this country about 1900, probably the result of a cultural exchange during the Spanish-American War. I never would have thought of that, but it makes sense. It is noticeable on this recording and most performances of violin and guitar that more extreme variations in the accenting and rhythm of the original theme occur than take place in violin-banjo combinations or unaccompanied violin performances. So, all right, let's see if we hear all that syncopation and such. This is Jelson Setters. The song is The Wild Wagoner. Thank you.
is good.
Yeah, that's Chelson Setters and an unknown guitar player, but super high energy there. The track is called The Wild Wagoner. That was from 1928, by the way. Next track is actually, about a year later, 1929. The artist is Prince Albert Hunt's Texas Ramblers. Now, Archie Prince Albert Hunt was from Terrell, Texas, just south of Dallas. His group, the Texas Ramblers, played a style of music that later evolved into Western swing, featuring an interplay between guitar and fiddle. Hunt also played with his neighbors Oscar and Doc Harper, and there was even a television documentary that was made about him in the 70s. He met his death outside of a Dallas bar, shot by a jealous husband. That's Prince Albert Hunt. Now, the story, or the facts given by Harry Smith in this instance, because he likes to talk about the music side of it, he goes, an even more elaborate complex of accent variations occur in this Texas violin performance than took place with similar instrumentation in the song we just heard, The Wild Wagoner. Relative freedom with the melody took place earlier in Texas and Louisiana than in the more northern states, probably because of a greater diversification of cultures along the Gulf Coast. Harry Smith's a genius, how he puts this stuff together and you can begin to feel the story, how we get from Bun Stevens to this track. Here's Prince Albert Hunt's Texas Ramblers. The song is entitled Wake Up, Jacob. Another great number. Very interesting on that, the melody and the rhythm. Wake Up Jacob by Prince Albert Hunt's Texas Ramblers. Now, at this point in time, now that he's got us in the South and we're hearing fiddle music, I would say that Harry Smith would have been remiss if he didn't start discussing Cajun music. And guess what he does next? It's exactly where he goes. The artist is Del Malachny and Blind Uncle Gaspard. It's a song called La Danseuse, French for the dancer. Del Malachny was a left-handed fiddler from an area near Marksville, Louisiana, and he was from a large family with ties to Quebec. Alcide Blind Uncle Gaspard, his partner, who was the guitar player, from Avoye Parish, if that's how you pronounce it, I don't know, usually played American country music in a string band with his brothers, Victor and Ahmad. Lachny and Gaspard had not played together often before this recording session. They might not have even known each other very well at all, which is rather interesting. And for Harry Smith's input here, he says, the distinctiveness of this Arcadian violin guitar combination is immediately noticeable, for not only is the melody itself of a type rather foreign to the Anglo-American pattern, but the steady and regular unison rhythm is very typical of Louisiana. Because Taylor Craig's Louisiana Melody Makers were a contemporary string group with a highly perfected rhythm of this sort, and very pure examples can be found among recordings made in New Orleans, he says, within the last 10 years, which would mean the late 30s and the 40s, because this was all put together in 1952, as I mentioned. So then, here is Del Malachny and Blind Uncle Gaspard with La Danseuse, a little bit of Cajun music for you. Is a very, very old example of, but maybe before it was even Cajun, it was Acadian.
Yeah, you know? I was thinking that. It didn't sound like the same Cajun music that I'm familiar with.
Right, because it's 1929.
Right, it's much gentler.
Exactly. This is before it got that slicker sort of a feel to it. And that's really funny to even be calling Cajun music slick, because it never really, that really doesn't apply.
Maybe but, we're thinking of Zydeco.
Well, that Zydeco and Cajun, the only difference is, I think, is that it's, you know, one's a white art, and the other one is basically a black art. Not exclusively, but that's pretty much true. Now, we're going to move from Louisiana and go east a bit to Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, a song that was recorded at approximately the same time as the song we just heard, about maybe a couple months earlier. October of 1928 is when the song Georgia Stomp was recorded by Andrew and Jim Baxter. Now, the Baxter home in Calhoun, Georgia, was a regional center for string band music. Father Andrew and son Jim could play a number of musical styles and did so with many other local musicians. In August of 1927, the African-American Baxters accompanied a white Georgia string band named the Georgia Yellowhammers to Charlotte for a recording session. Imagine this in 1927. Although they had to ride in separate cars, they played together for some recordings. The Baxters also recorded by themselves at that session. A racially integrated string band from Georgia must have been a very unusual sight in the studio in the 1920s. There were more sessions with and without the Georgia Yellowhammers in 1928 and 29, but the both Baxters died in the 1950s. What Harry Smith tells us is that this performance is structurally intermediate between the early rural dance style and the syncopated urban style that was perfected about 1880. Toward the end of the recording, the Louisiana regional melody, usually called Mama's Baby Boy or Pork Chops Rag or Gate Mouth, is interpolated. None of us know any of those songs. I know that. I certainly don't. That's why this whole thing is so rich to me. All right, here is Andrew and Jim Baxter with Georgia Stomp.
Now this is old Georgia Stomp. Also your partner. My hands up, Aiden Spurgeon. Break loose and walk back. I take your time. Swing your corner. Swing your part. Join your partner's right hand. Now right and left all the way through. Corners now. Mm-hmm.
your corners now.
I got to mention this right now. You listen to 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. The show is How Music Changed every Friday between 5 and 6. Myself, Tom Ryan, and Heidi Morales-Ryan, who you just heard on the mic. And we are playing our way through Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music. Now, I know that a lot of this is really strange and dated for most of the people who are hearing it. But if you have an open mind, and I really hope that you do, you're going to you will have to recognize just how fantastic this is. Not just the songs themselves, but the way that we are being presented to them by Harry Smith in such an educational manner. I mean, there's so much that you can pick up from this. And that's why I really wanted to share it as one of our How Music Changed series. And thus, here we are playing what is called social music. And we'll be doing this for the next couple of weeks. Not all of it will be violin instrumentals, as I mentioned. There will be, you know, lots of gospel music and such like that. And, well, we'll see where this goes before the end of the show, even today. All right. That was Georgia Stomp that we just heard with Andrew and Jim Baxter. And the next track is entitled Brilliancy Medley, which is very interesting because it is a series of different songs as performed by Eck Robertson and family. Now, Alexander Eck Robertson was born in Delaney, Arkansas, and he goes all the way back with recordings to 1922. His recording of a fiddle tune called Sally Gooden is considered the first commercial recording of traditional American country music. That's pretty incredible. And I think the reason that Harry Smith didn't include it is he did not go back that far because the technology was so bad that the recordings are just a mess. And he chose songs that he considered to be like relatively clear. Now, these are all from 78 RPM records, so you're hearing a lot of scratches and noise. So if he's saying that they were too noisy, you can be pretty darn certain that it would have been a tough listen. But anyway, in 1923, he played the same song on radio, Sally Gooden, and became the first country artist to advertise his recording in the new medium, phonograph records, and radio. Robertson toured with traveling medicine shows from 1903 to 1906, and he also worked as a pianist for silent movie houses. He spent most of his life in Amarillo, Texas, participating in fiddle contests from the 1930s to the 1960s, and he made his living as a piano tuner. At one contest in the early 1960s, he met and was interviewed by members of the new Lost City Ramblers, scholar performers who knew of Robertson through this very anthology. They were the people who were actually tuning in to Harry Smith and helping make this recording as popular and as valuable as it is, the new Lost City Ramblers. So as a result of them meeting Eck, he subsequently appeared at a number of folk festivals, including the UCLA Folk Festival in 1964 and the 1965 Newport Festival. Harry Smith says that Eck Robertson was one of the pioneer rural recording artists. His playing in the present recording is quite archaic in its studied and exultant formality, but the medley of traditional tunes is more suited to the popular dance steps of the 1920s than for the square dance. Thus, Brilliancy Medley by Eck Robertson and family. Thank you. provided in Harry Smith's booklet of Eck Robertson and family, showing them five of them. It looks like there are two women, two men, and a child, maybe a young girl, all part of the Eck Robertson and family. Although on the track we just heard, Brilliancy Medley, was one violin with two guitars and a banjo. Maybe the little girl wasn't playing yet, who's in the photo. I don't know. All right. Moving on is yet another change of pace. Another song, though, still from around the same era, maybe even about a year earlier, February of 1928. It's a song called Indian War Whoop, and it's credited to Hoyt Floyd Ming and his Pep Steppers. Now, the Pep Steppers were a family band who played at dances, like the Eck family, who played at dances in Tupelo, Mississippi area. Their name refers to the energetic foot stomping of Roselle Ming, who was actually the guitar player, which can be heard on their recordings, quite obviously. Roselle himself felt that the stomping got in the way of the band, but producer Ralph Peer, one of the key human beings of getting these recordings made, by the way, he traveled to all sorts of like rural areas with sound recording equipment to pick up exactly what these songs represent. But he encouraged Roselle to keep his stomping on the track. So the band auditioned for Peer at a local drugstore and eventually recorded four songs for him. The fiddler, whose name is Hoyt Ming, erroneously listed as Floyd on the release on the original 78 RPM record, worked most of his life as a potato farmer, playing local fairs and dances with the family band. By 1957, he had given up playing, but public interest had generated by the Anthology of American Folk Music, this very thing that we're playing right now, eventually led him to reform the band. And the Mings eventually played at the National Folk Festival in 1973 and were part of a Mississippi contingent at the 1974 Smithsonian Festival of American Folklife. The group also, by the way, appeared in the movie Ode to Billy Joe. So how about that? If you watch that movie, you'll be able to see Hoyt Floyd Wing and his Pep Steppers. Now, as mentioned by Harry Smith, a short synopsis of what he says, if this recording bears much relation to Indian music, it is doubtful at all that it does. It is, however, rather romanticism akin to that of Western movies, meaning it's not really the truth, but it's akin to it. It's romantic. The Pep Steppers' drumming of feet is a type of performance seldom heard outside of religious music. So there you go. Hoyt Floyd Wing and his Pep Steppers. This track is called Indian War Whoop. Thank you. That's right, Floyd Ming and his Pep Steppers. Indian War Whoop. We are playing our way through the Anthology of American Folk Music, a compilation of 84 songs, actually, that were put together by Harry Smith, and then another double CD, which made a volume 4, added about another 30 or so. And we're going to be playing all of them in order, because I think that's the way Harry Smith would have wanted it to go. It makes quite good sense also because, as you can see, there's a relation as we move through these songs and cover what it actually is. Now, we've been listening to today pretty much exclusively a lot of fiddle music, fiddle with guitar accompaniment in most cases, not all of them, and occasionally a vocal. Now, things change a little bit here with a song that takes us back in time considerably. The artist is Henry Thomas, and the song is called Old Country Stomp. Now, it's not taking us way back in time any more than the other songs in terms of the date of its recording. Like most of the other songs that we've played today, this is recorded in 1928. And everything that we've played except for the first track took place in 1928 or 1929 that we've played today. First track was from 1926, as I recall. Okay, that being said, blues singer and songster Henry Ragtime, Texas Thomas, was in his 50s when he recorded for Vocalion Records around 1929. Because of his age, his recordings are one of the few examples of archaic 19th century African-American music to be preserved on disc. His unique musical style continues to intrigue modern listeners, especially his use of the quills, which is a form of panpipe made from cane. Thomas was born in the Big Sandy area of Texas. He played on the streets of Dallas and at country dances. Interviews with his relatives in later years paint him as a hobo and wanderer, often able to travel by train by entertaining the other passengers. The folklorist Mac McCormick seems to have had a chance meeting with Thomas in Houston in 1949. He described him as a big man, perhaps 6'3", and dressed as a hobo. Others have also claimed to have actually seen and met him under the name Ragtime Thomas. Now, the spirited feel of Thomas's music found many fans during the folk song revival, which is what I mean when I talk about the late 50s, early 60s. Versions of his songs cropped up among those who had little inkling of the man himself. In the notes to his album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, which was his second album, Dylan recalled that the song, Honey, Just Allow Me One More Chance, came from a, quote, now-dead Texas blues singer, unquote, that he could only remember that his name was Henry. It was Henry Thomas. Thomas's quill solo in the song Bulldoze Blues, by the way, became the basis for the famous introduction in the rock group Canned Heat when they did their version of Going Up the Country, which is the song that opens up the Woodstock album. Also, his fishing blues made it into many repertoires as well. As for Harry Smith, what does he tell us? He says, he's talking about the lyrics here, and I think this is very interesting. Composing a verse by repeating the same phrase several times preceded the still popular technique of singing one line twice, followed by a different phrase of the same length and rhyme as the first two. In other words, the way a blues song is structured. You'd repeat it, and then you'd basically release on the third line. Goes, this is different because you just basically repeat the same phrase several times. And goes, this later device was popularized, meaning the birth of the blues, around 1900. Harry Smith wrecks me. He knows so much. Here, then, is Henry Thomas with Old Country Stomp. Thank you. Henry Thomas, Old Country Stomp. We got time to squeeze in one more, and this is a great way to end because it's a little bit different than what we've been hearing up until this point. It's by an artist named Jim Jackson. The song is called Old Dog Blue, and this is one of my favorite songs ever written about a dog. This is just so memorable. What's interesting about it, though, which I never knew, and this is because, again, here's Harry Smith, what he says on this song. He goes, it's a dance tune with the original words replaced by narrative lyrics. He goes, vestiges of the earlier song can be heard in the lines beginning, who's been here since I've been gone? So what it means is that Jim Jackson picked up a song that he knew that maybe already was 100 years old. He knew the line, who's been here since I've been gone, but he's not really, that's not part of his story. He then makes up his own story about his pet dog, Blue, and it's awesome. So we'll leave you with this. Jim Jackson, Old Dog Blue. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us for the hour, and I hope you can join us next week. We'll pick up exactly where we left off. See you then.
I'm going back where I come. I'm going back where I come. I'm going back to Giles County. My wife died, left me a bounty. We done pretty good ganged around. That's the reason why I'm going to Giles County. Had old dog's name was Blue. You know Blue was mighty true. You know Blue was a good old dog. Blue treat a possum and a holler low. You can know from that he's a good old dog. Blue treat a possum out on a limb. Blue looked at me and I looked at him. Grabbed that possum, put him in a sack. Do me and Blue till I get back. Yeah, ring, yeah, ring, yeah, yeah, ring, yeah, ring, yeah. Who been here since I've been gone? A little bit of girl with the red dress on. Who been here since I've been gone? A little bit of girl with the red dress on. Old Blue's feet was big and round. Old Blue's feet was big and round. Never allowed a possum to test the ground. Me and Blue went out on a hunt. Blue treat a possum in a hollow stump. You know Blue was a good old dog. Blue treat a possum in a hollow log. You know from that he's a good old dog. But old Blue died and I dug his grave. I dug his grave with a silver spade. I let him down with a golden chain. And every length I called his name. One Blue, you good dog, you. One Blue, you good dog, you. Blue laid down and died like a man. Blue laid down and died like a man. Nice green possum in the promised land. I'm gonna tell you this to let you know. Old Blue's gone where good dogs go. When I hear old Blue bark, when I hear old Blue bark, Blue treat a possum and know the czar. Blue treat a possum and know the czar.